Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a good number present today. I'm grateful for that. We have visitors with us, and we're delighted that you have come to be with us. And hopefully, as we study from the Word of God, we can come to a greater knowledge of the truth and the things that God would have us to do in His will. Tim said this morning I got his attention with the title of the lesson right off the start, so I'm hoping that it'll get your attention as well. Just who do I think I am anyway? That's a kind of a catchy title, I suppose, but this is a self-examination as we get into the lesson today. And sometimes we may think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think, and sometimes we do not think highly enough of ourselves. And that's what we want to talk about today, just who do I think I am anyway? Was read from Job chapter 14 a while ago, verses 1 through 12. I'm going to turn back to that passage again and just look at it for a little bit in our beginning of our study. He starts out by saying, "Man that is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble." I think all of us understand that. "He cometh forth like a flower and is cut down. He fleeth also as a shadow and continueth not. And dost thou open thine eyes upon such a one and bringeth me into judgment with thee?" So just who am I anyway? Job says that man is a few days and full of trouble. So as we said before, this is a self-examination that we're talking about today. Now, I put it in the words like I'm talking to me. Just who do I think I am anyway? But I want each one of you to apply this to yourself in the same personal way in which I have stated the title of the lesson this morning. So we'll be talking about from a self-examination. And I think if we do this, it'll be profitable in our study today. There are at least two different extremes that we might pursue when we start talking about just who we think that we are. And, of course, number A, or the first one, I may think, well, I'm the greatest person that's ever been on this earth. I may think I'm the wisest person that's ever lived, the most educated. I'm the one that knows everything, always right and never wrong, one that must always be in charge, telling everyone else what to do. This is kind of what I may think of myself. This is one extreme, at least, that sometimes we find people feeling this way. And I think we have examples in the Bible that we'll notice some of these in just a little bit that was exactly that way. In Matthew chapter 23, as a matter of fact, if you want to turn there, let's read a few verses there from Matthew chapter 23, beginning with verse 1. Matthew 23, beginning with verse 1, and incidentally, I'm reading out of the King James Version. Since I'm as old as I am, that's where most of my memory work was done and where it seems more plain to me, I guess, than any of the rest. Matthew chapter 23, beginning with verse 1. "Then said Jesus unto the multitude, then spake Jesus to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. All therefore whatsoever they bid you observe, that observe and do, but do not after their works, for they say and do not. For they bind heavy burdens and grievous to be borne, and lay them upon men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. But all their works they do to be seen of men, that they may make broad the phylacteries, enlarge the borders of their garments. They love their uppermost rooms at feasts and the chief seats at the synagogues and greetings in the markets, and to be called men, called of men, rabbi, rabbi. But he says, Be not ye called rabbi, for one is your master, even Christ, and all ye are our brethren. And call no man your father upon the earth, for one is your father which is in heaven. Neither be ye called master, for one is your master, even Christ. But he that is great among you shall be your servant. And whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and whoever humbleth himself shall be exalted." And so here in this passage in Matthew chapter 23, the first 12 verses there, we see what the Pharisees were like. They did what they did to be seen of men. They loved the uppermost feast seats at feast, and they would be the places where they would receive the most honor from men. And this is what they were seeking, was men's honor. Now we turn over to Luke in chapter 20, verses 46 and 47. We have another passage there that we'll notice together. Luke chapter 20, verses 46 and 47. I'm trying to give you time to turn there too. He says, "Beware of the scribes which desire to walk in long robes and long greetings in the market and the higher seats in the synagogue and the chief rooms in the feast, which devour widows' houses and for a show make long prayers and say, the same shall receive greater damnation. My tongue all twisted this morning. So we talk about then this type of incident where people are thinking more highly of themselves than what God gave them the authority to. And so they think they're the greatest person that's ever lived. And I think we've seen people like that in our lifetime. People who thought they were the wisest, smartest person that ever lived, the most educated, knew more about everything than anybody else, always right, never wrong, always had to be in charge, telling everyone else what to do. And so this is one type of person that people think they are. Now the other, right, the opposite to that, are those who think that they're nothing in the sight of God and other people as well. And we'll go back to Psalms chapter 8 in this one. And you remember how David in Psalms chapter 8 was talking to the Father and how he felt at that particular time. Psalms chapter 8, verse 3 beginning, it says, "When I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, and the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou didst visit him?" So here was how David felt. Now just who am I that God would even pay any attention to me? God is one who created all the heavens and the earth and all things that are therein. He's the one, the creator of the universe, spoke everything into existence. And so just who am I that God would even pay attention to me? David felt honored that God would honor him or would even recognize him as being somebody. And so this is the other extreme then that we talk about. Now in the book of Hebrews, there's another reading in chapter in Hebrews 2, verses 6 and 7. Notice what he says. Verse 6, he says, "But one in a certain place testified, saying, What is man that thou art mindful of him, and the son of man that thou didst visit him? Thou madest him a little lower than the angels. Thou crownedst him with glory and honor, and didst set him over the works of thy hand." So here's the two extremes then that we talk about from this idea of just who am I anyway. One would think, well, I'm the greatest that's ever lived. The other would think, well, just who am I that God would even pay attention to me? That I'm nobody as far as God is concerned and as far as other people are concerned. There are those who have the idea that I'm only one person and I cannot make a difference in this life, whatever I do. So it doesn't matter what I do, I'm just one person. And I can't make a difference because of just being one person. Well, remember David in 1 Samuel chapter 17. He was the son of Jesse. Jesse had 8 sons, and David was the younger one. He had 3 of Jesse's sons were in the war with Saul. Saul and his army was on one hill, and the Philistines was on the other hill. The Philistines had a giant, you remember, had a champion. There was a giant that stood about 9 feet tall by the name of Goliath, and every day he would come out and he would defy the armies, and he'd say, "There's no need of us putting all these men to battle. You send somebody out to fight against me, and if I kill him, then you be our servants. If you kill me, we'll be your servants," and all this kind of thing. But nobody would even dare to try to go to this giant to fight with him. Well, David came to check on his brothers. 3 of his older brothers were in the war with Saul. He came to see how the battle was going, and just happened while he was there, this giant came out to defy the armies of Israel. And David heard what he had to say, and so he wanted to know why nobody had gone against that giant. Well, his older brothers thought he was kind of shaming them a little bit and just trying to make something of himself, make a name for himself. And so they scolded him a little bit for his thinking about fighting the giant. But he told Saul that he would go against this giant, that he could take care of the giant. And Saul looked at him and he said, "Well, you're just a child. And this man has been a military man from a child. And how do you think you could go against the giant?" And David said, "Well, When I was keeping my father's sheep, there was a bear that came out and took a lamb, and I went and overtook him and slew the bear and rescued the lamb. There was a lion that did the same thing. And if God can deliver me from the mouth of the lion and the bear, he can deliver me from this Philistine. And so he agreed to go that to fight against the Philistine. And as the story goes, Saul put his armor on David, but David said, "I can't use that. I've never tested it." All he wanted was his staff, his sling, the shepherd bag. He selected five stones and put in that shepherd bag. And he goes off to meet this giant who's 9 feet tall. And they said he's just a child himself, David is. And so the giant comes out and he sees David coming to him. He wanted to know if he was like a dog, that they were coming against him with sticks and so forth. And he told David if he came against him that he would feed his flesh to the animals and the birds of the air that day. And David said, "If you come against me, that I'll feed your flesh to the animals and the birds and take the head off of your body." And so he said, "Well, how are you going to do that? You don't have a sword, anything." So they talk for a little bit, and then the giant makes his motion and starts toward David. He hears his armor bearer and all the armor that he has, the spear and all that kind of thing. And so David starts toward the giant, takes a stone from his shepherd bag and slings it, and the stone hits the giant right in the forehead, and he falls forward on the ground. David goes to where the giant is. He doesn't have a sword, so he takes the giant's sword and draws the sword, slays the giant, cuts off his head, and takes it back to Saul. Now all these people then, all the armies of Israel, they begin to flee and to follow after and pursue the people, since they fled because their champion was gone. Well, may I ask you a question? Can I make a difference then being one? David made a difference in being one, didn't he? When he stood before the giant here on this day. 1 Samuel chapter 17, along toward the latter part of that chapter is where the highlight of it is that we talked about today. And then there was Joseph. You remember Joseph, that his brothers sold him down into the land of Egypt, and he was bought by a man by the name of Potiphar down in the land of Egypt. You remember all the things that happened down there? He was put in prison. He interpreted dreams. He rose to be second in command to the Pharaoh there in Egypt. And this was Joseph, who later saved his people from disaster. You remember how that there was 7 years of plenty, and then there were 7 years of famine. And Joseph was chosen as one to gather all the food together during the plentiful years, so that they'd have food when the famine came. And when the famine came, then his brothers came down to buy food. Later, his family was all brought down into the land of Egypt. They were saved by Joseph, just being one person, and was sold down in there by his brothers, and yet he gained enough respect and so forth that he saved his people from starvation. And then there was Esther. You remember Esther, who appeared before the king, was willing to threaten her life or risk her life in order to save her people. And so here we've got about three different ones: David, Joseph, and Esther, who were just one single person who made a great difference in the kingdom because they were willing to do as they could, whatever it was that they could do. They were willing to do that to save their people at that particular time. Now that tells me then that regardless of who I am, I'm just one, but I can do what I can do, what God has intended for me to do. And as long as I do that, then I've done great things and God is pleased. Now, I agree that we ought not to think more highly of ourselves than God has given us the authority to think. We ought not to think more highly. We ought not to be one that felt like that we were greater than everybody else. But at the same time, I also believe that we ought not to sell ourselves short and give up the battle. Now, we can do both. We can either go too far one way or the other. We need to realize who we are, that we do belong to God, that God has given us authority to where we can do certain things, and we need to do the things that we can to where we can please Him and not make excuses for not doing the work that we need to do. Let's notice a few things we might say. "I'm not much," answered the militarist. He said, "just an instrument to stand by a gun and to take the consequences, only a bit of common fodder." is what the militarists might say about who he is. The atheist might answer, man is but a speck whose life is short and whose value dies away. Our life is only what we see. We go to dust. Death ends it all. Well, the Bible doesn't say that the death ends it all. This is the beginning point, isn't it? Not the ending. The poet may answer, life is a dream, a shadow, a meteor bursting between two unknown eternities. And so different ways in which we may look at who we are. But the one that really knows is our Father. And our Father knows man one side from to the other, inside out. And so God knows us. He is mindful of man. Even though he made the world and all the things that are in the world, he knows man inside out. And he sent his Son into the world to redeem man from his iniquity. So what am I as far as God is concerned? I'm something that's important enough that he sent his Son into the world to die for me. Who are you? You're important enough that God sent his Son into the world to die for your iniquity. Thou hast made him a little lower, he says, than the angels, and crowned him with glory and honor in Psalms chapter 8 and verse 5. And so God knows us, and we know that he knows that we are worth something to him. So let's study the question then from the Lord's concept today of man. When we talk about just who am I anyway, who do I think I am anyway? I am of more value than the whole world. This is what God would say concerning me. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26, for what is man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? So our soul is worth more than anything else. We could gain the whole world, and if we gained the whole world, what would we value? When we stand before the Lord on the day of judgment, none of those things will matter. It's just being right in the sight of God. The value of a thing may be easily determined by the price that's paid for it. Well, if that's the case, then we are very important, aren't we? We're very costly. The price paid for man's redemption was the greatest thing that God could have ever given, his own Son. And so if it was worth the price of his own Son, then we're worth something in the eyes of God. Now measure the price of redemption by the bloody sweat that Jesus came from his brow, and the desertion from his people, the betrayal from his own 12, the scourging, the beating before he endured the cross, and then being nailed to the cross and hanging there suspended between heaven and earth, and the life slowly going from his body, the broken heart, the pierced sides. Why? Why did he do all this? Because he was a murderer? No. Because he was a blasphemer? No. Because he was sinful? No. He had no sins. He did it for me. He did it because of you and me. And all that he did, I'm to be grateful for. And I know that I am worth something to God because he did all this. I'm worth something to Jesus Christ, or he would not have gone through all of this for me. You're worth something to God, or he would not have gone through all of this for you. And so just who do I think I am anyway? I am a sinner saved by grace. All of us sin and come short of the glory of God. This is one thing that the Bible makes very plainly as we begin to study, that we are sinful creatures. We do make mistakes. In Matthew chapter 16 and, in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9, it says, I'm a sinner saved by grace. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourself. It is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And so this grace of God is important for me. Jesus Christ shed his blood, but if it were not for the grace of God, then I could not be saved, nor could you. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26, he says, for what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? And so here the grace of God is important. Without grace, I cannot be saved. For by grace are you saved through faith, and it's not of yourself. It's a gift of God. And we understand if it were not for God's gift, then we could not have the salvation that we desire. In the song Beneath the Cross of Jesus, verse 2 said, upon the cross of Jesus mine eyes it seems can see the very dying form of one who suffered there for me. And from his a smitten heart, with tears, to two wonders I confess, the wonders of his glorious love and my own unworthiness. And so two things that we can see from Jesus there on the cross: his willingness to suffer for us, his giving his life there on the cross, and our unworthiness that he suffered for. And so this is who I am. I am a sinner that is saved by the grace of God. Upon the cross of Jesus, mine eyes, it seems, can see the very dying form of one suffered there for me. And from my smitten heart, with tears, two wonders I confess, the wonders of his glorious love and my unworthiness. And this is what we need to think about very seriously. And many songs that we sing, if we think about the words that we sing, there's a wonderful lesson that's involved in those songs. And we've had some wonderful songs this morning in our service already. I am a steward of my master. If I'm a steward, then that means that I am to do what the master would have me to do, that I am to honor my master in all things and to do the things that he would have me to do. In the book of Luke, in chapter 12, if you'll turn to Luke chapter 12, we'll start reading with verse 42 and read a few verses there. Luke 12, and down at verse 42. And the Lord said, "Who then is a faithful and wise steward, whom the Lord shall make ruler over his household, and give them their portion of meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Of a truth I say to you that he will make him ruler over all that he hath. And if the servant says in his heart, 'My Lord delays his coming,' and he begins to beat the men servants and the maid servants, and to eat and to drink and to be drunk, the Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looketh not for him, and at an hour when he is not aware, and will cut him asunder, and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers." So here the master, the steward of that master, is one who tries to do the very best that he can to honor his master, to do whatever it is that his master has requested of him to do. In order to do that, in Luke chapter 12, verses 42 through 46. "One day I shall stand before him and give an account of my stewardship." And that's one thing that we're taught from the Bible, that one day he'll come back and we'll have to give an account of our stewardship. Now the question is then, which will it be with me? Which shall I be? Will I be a good and faithful steward, or will I be one that is a wicked and slothful one? And that depends upon me and the way that I live, my attitude toward truth, and my being willing to do what the truth has said for me to do. If I'm willing to please my master and a steward of that master and do all I can to try to please him and to serve him in the way that he expects me to do, then I will be that good and faithful servant. And that's what we all want to be, is the good and faithful servant when the Lord comes again. I am a laborer in my master's vineyard. In Matthew chapter 20, and down at the first verse beginning of Matthew chapter 20, I think most of us could probably just about quote this passage without even turning and reading it. Matthew chapter 20, beginning in verse 1 of Matthew chapter 20. "For the kingdom of heaven is likened to a man that is an householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And he went out about the third hour and saw others standing idle in the market, and said unto them, 'Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatever is right I will give you.' And they went their way. And again he went out about the sixth and the ninth hours, and did likewise. And about the 11th hour he went out again and found others standing idle, and said unto them, 'Why stand ye here all the day idle?' And they say unto him, 'Because no man hath hired us.' He said unto them, 'Go ye also into the vineyard, and whatever is right, that shall ye receive.' So when it when even was come, the Lord of the vineyard sent unto the steward, call the laborers and give them their they're higher, beginning from the last unto the first. And when they came that had was hired about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more, and they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house, saying, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. And he answered and said unto them, friend, I do you no wrong. Didst not thou agree with me for a penny? Take that thine is and go thy way. I will give unto this last, even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is thine eye evil because I am good? So the last shall be first and the first last, for many shall be called, but few are chosen. So I am a laborer in the master's vineyard. He calls me to work for him in his vineyard. Comes out early in the morning, whether I'm the one that's at the first hour, the sixth hour, the ninth hour, the 11th hour, whatever it is, I am to work in that vineyard. I must work till the close of the day. You do not retire from being a Christian. You do not retire from laboring in the Lord's vineyard. Now, we may retire from secular work, but as far as the Lord's work is concerned, we do not retire from being a Christian. We try to be more the kind of Christian that God would have us to be on the rest of our lives, all of our life, to be better than we ever have before. I pray to the Lord almost daily that my preaching in the last years of my life will be the best that I've ever done. And so this is what we do. We try to work hard to where we can do the best that we've ever done in the last days of our life in serving God in the way that we ought to. I am a soldier of the cross. In Ephesians chapter 6, beginning in the 10th verse, we're told part of what it means to be a soldier in the way that we should. Ephesians chapter 6, beginning with the 10th verse, and this, of course, is putting on the armor of God that he prescribes for us to where we can be the soldier that we need to be. Verse 10 beginning, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness, against this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take on you the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. And having done all to stand, stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness, your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, and above all taking the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for all saints. So if I'm going to be a soldier of the Lord, then I'm going to have to prepare to be a soldier of the cross. If we're a soldier in the Army of the United States, then we don't just go from home right into the battlefield. But we spend some time going through training and learning how to use weapons and how to conduct ourselves to where we can escape death and to where we can be the soldier that our master would have us to be. So if I'm a soldier of the cross, then I must do what I can to add these things to my life to where I know how to handle the situation when I'm there. So I am a soldier of the cross. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, beginning in the first verse, 2 Timothy chapter 2, I exhort, therefore, that first of all, supplication, prayer, intercession, giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all that are in authority, that you may lead a quiet and peaceful life in all godliness and honesty. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior, who will have all men to be saved and to come to a knowledge of the truth. For there is one God and one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus, who gave himself a ransom for all to be testified in due time. And so in the idea of our serving God in the right way, and the let me turn over now and notice 2 Timothy as well as 1 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 2. Thou therefore, my son, be strong in the grace of Jesus Christ. And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also. Thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. And so we do all we can to be pleasing to the one that has chosen us. We want to honor that one that has chosen us, the one that thought enough of us to choose us as a soldier in his army. And so we do what we can to add these things to our life. Romans chapter 13 and verse 12, he said, "The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light." And so this is what we're to do to be the kind of person that we ought to be. I am a citizen of a kingdom that will stand forever. Now this is some kind of a kingdom. In Daniel chapter 2 and verse 44, it says, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall be break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." And so this kingdom we're talking about is not one that's here today and gone tomorrow, but it's there forever. In the book of Hebrews in chapter 12 and verse 28, "Wherefore we receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear." Also in 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 9, "But as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither hath entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him." And so this kingdom that we're talking about is one that lasts forever. And as a citizen of that kingdom, of that heavenly country that we're talking about, I must obey its laws and be an honor to my ruler. And I think that's what we are trying to do today. We're here to try to honor the laws of our Lord and to be an honor unto him. "I am my brother's keeper." You know, that's a question that's been asked through the years. Am I my brother's keeper? And so, yes, we are our brother's keeper. "Therefore, since I'm my brother's keeper, then I must go out into the highways and the hedges and compel him in to come in under the fold." And we'll go back and talk about a man who had prepared a supper and had invited many to his supper. And when time came, then they started making excuses. And he sent out to have them bring others in that they might be filled. The supper might be filled. And so they said they had gone out into the highways to the different places in still room. And so I said, "Go into the highways and the hedges and compel them to come in." Well, this is the way we are. If we're our brother's keeper, then we're going to do whatever we can to try to find that brother that's lost, to teach him the truth, that he too may have right to the tree of life and may enter into heaven in a little while. "I am heir to treasures untold in heaven." You know, the treasures that's been laid up for us and set up for us, we just can't imagine. Hebrews 11 and verse 16. "But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly, wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath provided for them a city." This is something that God has provided. Jesus said, "I go and prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also." And so this is where this city that we're talking about. Peter said in 1 Peter 1, verse 3, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you, who are kept by the power of God through faith unto salvation, ready to be revealed at the last time." And so then I am my brother's keeper. I am one that's an heir of a treasure that's untold, one that we cannot even imagine. By way of conclusion, in view of all this that we've talked about this morning, shall a Christian ever become discouraged in life to the point where he would turn himself away from God? Surely not. And after all that God has done for us, then surely we know that we mean something to God, that we are important to him, that he's not willing that any of us should perish. He wants all of us to be saved. He wants us to go forth day by day, living the kind of life that would be an example, that would lead others to him, and using our mouths to teach the gospel to them the best way that we know how, by example, by word of mouth, by going out and finding those that are lost. You and I mean a lot to God, and we should appreciate it and appreciate all that He's done for us, and that we do mean a lot to Him. And we ought to try to please Him in all things that we do. Every day of our life should be filled with our being anxious to serve God and to please Him in a way that we should. The lesson is yours. Now, just who do you think you are anyway? Well, you are a child of God, made in the image of God. Means a lot to Him, enough that He sent His Son to die on the cross that you might have salvation of your souls. And so since you know how much you mean to God, then surely you'd want to save that soul that God gave you that's worth more than anything else in the world. If there are those here today who've never yet obeyed the gospel of Christ, then the water's provided. You can be baptized today before you leave this building if you need to do so. If you're already a child of God but you haven't lived in the way that you should and you've fallen short along the way and you need to make corrections, no better time than now to do that. Just like we talked about last Wednesday night in an invitation. We don't know when the Lord's coming again. We know He's coming, but we don't know when. But He says we're to be ready. And if we're ready, we enter in with Him when He comes. If we're not, then we're left outside in the cold, and we don't want to be out there. So today, if you need to obey the gospel, then why don't you come while we stand and sing the song that's been selected.